scientific problems for scientific creationism, or scientific problems for creation science. Subtitle, How Old is the Earth? Robert C. Newman. An abstract. Creation science is often used as a synonym for young earth creationism, though the latter is really the better term. Young earth creationism depends very strongly on the idea that most of the geologic record is that of the one-year flood at Noah's time, rather than being spread over geologic history. Problems with flood geology are sketched, including the number and types of fossils, the distribution of sediments, the presence of structures which must have formed slowly. Other problems which face a recent creation but do not involve flood geology concern the rates of various processes and various astronomical evidences. What is scientific creationism? It's the belief that the Earth and universe are very young compared to the usual secular dates of, say, 4.5 billion years for the Earth and 13.7 for the universe. That is only thousands of years old instead of billions. Typical young Earth creation dates vary from perhaps 6,000 years to perhaps 20,000 or so. So what is scientific creationism? Belief that the Earth and universe were young compared to the usual secular dates. Claims then that the geologic record was laid down quickly, nearly all in the 1 year of Noah's flood. But there are creationists who are scientific who do not subscribe to this view, so a better name would be young earth creationism. Some problems with the young earth. These problems can be categorized under two headings: problems with the young earth in general, problems with flood geology in particular. We're going to consider these here in this talk in reverse order. What is flood geology? Flood geology claims that the geologic record is not a history of the Earth, rather the geologic record is a history of Noah's flood. Nearly all the geologic strata were thought to have been laid down in 1 year, thus all geologic phenomena formed very quickly. Flood geology is a major feature of young earth creationism, and some might feel that it is indispensable since some answer is needed for what to make of the geologic record. Well, it's not quite indispensable. There are young earth creationists who have argued that the geologic strata that we have were put down at creation rather than at the flood, but that's a much rarer view, and does not really make use of scientific evidence to defend it, to the best of my knowledge. So, flood geology, a major feature of young earth creationism. We're going to look at some scientific problems for flood geology, and we're going to suggest these. First of all, too many fossils. There are thousands of feet of marine fossils in the geologic strata. Was the Earth really covered many feet deep with marine life just before the flood, which is what you would have to explain all of these fossils? This is not a problem if these sediments are millions of years of deposits. Then you're looking at, 1 millionth of that amount would be the amount that was there at one particular time. A second problem is too many species. An enormous variety of plants and animals are found in the fossil record. Were there really hundreds of times as many species living at the flood as there are now? This problem, too, is solved if these varieties of plants and animals lived at various times in a much longer history of the Earth. A third problem, too few land animals. There are far few fossils of land animals than of marine animals. This is surprising if all these creatures perished in the same sudden catastrophe that buried them all in water or soil. This makes better sense if most land animals died on land, not in the flood, where scavengers and decay destroyed their carcasses before they could become fossils. Sediment distribution. If the geologic record is largely that of a one-year flood, then the sediments should have settled into the lowest places, sea bottoms. But there's too much sediment on land and not enough in the oceans to fit this scheme. This fits an old Earth in which sediments washed into the oceans are recycled by continental drift, dragging them down into the mantle, whereas the sediments left on the Earth stay there except for erosion removing them. Strata deposited too quickly. The claim of young geologists that strata were deposited quickly ignores the evidence of slow deposition and slow formation in much, but not all, of the geologic column. These sorts of features that look like slow formation involve erosion surfaces, potholes, types of cementation, metamorphosed sediments, and conglomerate rocks. Let's have a look at each of these. Erosion surfaces. Throughout the geological column, we find hills and valleys and stream beds. A number of these have embedded pebbles or shells, which are eroded flat to match the surface. This shows that material holding these objects was already solid when the erosion occurred. Potholes. Potholes are roundish, vertical-sided holes found in river bottom bedrock. They're also found in buried strata, implied that they were formed by rivers long ago. These structures need to be solid rock in order to form vertical or undercut sides. If they are still loose sediment, you will only get cone-shaped sides, and then the stuff will collapse. And so vertical sides or undercut sides are not possible. These structures, these potholes found in buried strata, show that these layers were exposed at the surface as solid rock rather than as sediment. That implies that the various strata in the fossil record were solid rock at the time they were exposed, rather than being laid down as just loose sediment rather quickly in a one-year flood. Cementation. Sedimentary rock consists of small particles cemented together. Some kinds of sedimentary rock are sandstone, in which the particles are sand, siltstone, in which the particles are the much finer particles we call silt, limestone, in which the particles are coral or shells. The cement in each of these is typically the same material as forms the particles. So sandstone formed out of sand, and the cementing material formed out of silica. Limestone, the material, the particles are coral or shells, and the cement is a calcium carbonate sort of thing. This is surprising if all material was laid down quickly as mud by the flood rather than gradually in water containing the particular dissolved materials. Metamorphosed sediments. What we call metamorphic rock is rock that has been chemically and physically altered by high heat and pressure. Some metamorphic rocks were clearly water-laid sediments before they were altered. Some of these have since been eroded and reburied, pointing to a long history of formation, not a one-year flood. So, rock that was laid down as water-laid sediment, then metamorphosed by high heat and pressure, then raised to surface and eroded, and then reburied. Long history of formation, not a one-year flood. Conglomerate rocks. Conglomerate rocks often consist of pieces of one sort of rock and a matrix surrounding material of another type of rock. Some of these have rounded pebbles for the pieces, indicating that the pebbles had experienced erosion somewhere, probably in a stream bed. Some of these rounded pebbles are sedimentary rocks, indicating that before these pebbles became pebbles and were rounded, they were part of a sediment somewhere and had solidified into rock. And some of the sedimentary pebbles even contain fossils. Again, we're looking at a long sequence of events needed to produce this particular type of rock. Summary on quick deposit. We're not claiming that no sediments have ever been laid down quickly. For example, the Mount St. Helens sediments that were laid down at its eruption and shortly thereafter, as often advertised in the young earth creation literature. But clearly not all sediments were laid down quickly. Like the process of bread making, or decoupage, or lacquering, the time taken for the whole process of bread making, decoupage, or lacquering, or sedimentation, the time taken for the whole process is controlled by the slowest steps in the process, not by the fastest steps in the process. Other phenomena in the geologic record. The flood won't produce much of the detailed phenomena we actually find in the rock record. Some of these are salt layers, clay silt layers, carbonate reefs, chemical separations, footprints, wind-laid sediments. Let's have a look. Salt layers. Seawater is about 3% salts, mostly sodium chloride, or common table salt, with a little calcium carbonate and calcium sulfate. As seawater evaporates, these salts precipitate when different fractions have been evaporated. The point basically here is that sodium chloride, calcium carbonate, and calcium sulfate have different abilities to dissolve in water. And so when half of this seawater at 3% salts has been evaporated, the material is now sufficiently saturated that calcium sulfate begins to precipitate out. So calcium sulfate precipitates when 50% has been evaporated. It's not until 80% has been evaporated, you're down to 20% of the original seawater, that calcium carbonate is now supersaturated and begins to precipitate out. And it's not until 90% of the seawater has evaporated that sodium chloride begins to precipitate out. The upshot is this, that if seawater has evaporated to below 10% of its original amount, you then will get a triplet layer of salts laid down in the bottom of the place where this water is located, the basin where this water is located. If seawater is evaporated down to between 10 and 20% of the of the amount, you get a doublet layer. You're missing the sodium chloride layer, but you've got the calcium carbonate and the calcium sulfate layers. And if seawater is evaporated down to 20 to 50% of its original volume, you get only a single singlet layer, and that would be the calcium sulfate. Salt layers in West Texas. The map here shows the area of West Texas and a little bit of New Mexico. There's a formation shown here by the orange, I guess we would call it, that's the boundaries of the Delaware Basin. And inside the Delaware Basin, we have 200,000 doublet layers of calcium carbonate and calcium sulfate. And what that basically is over that whole size of the Delaware Basin, we have 200,000 pairs of these layers of calcium carbonate and calcium sulfate. You can correlate the layers, that is, match wide and thick layers and see that the pattern is the same. You can correlate the layers up to 40 miles apart. The average total thickness of these 200,000 salt layers is 1,300 feet. So each layer is less than 1/10 of an inch thick. This looks like a summer-winter phenomenon in which water came into this basin during the winter, storms and things of that sort, and then during the summer the water was shallow enough and it was hot enough in the in that climate at that time to evaporate off water down to under 20% but above 10%, so that you laid down a double layer. Looks like a summer-winter phenomenon, a sort of thing that we see going on in the area of the Arabian Gulf. Looks like a summer-winter phenomenon, implying at least 200,000 years of history. And you need to evaporate 1 million feet of seawater in order to produce this. Well, you say, we've never hit 1 million feet of seawater. That's right. But if you've had 200,000 years, then you need to evaporate about 5 feet of seawater per year to do this, and that's not an outrageous assumption that the basin may have had that much water in it each year. Clay silt layers. We also find paired paper-thin layers of clay and silt deposited in lakes or seas with a clean clay layer and a coarser layer with organic material such as pollen or spores as well as the clay. This also looks like a seasonal phenomenon. The pollen and spores washed in during the growing season and shortly thereafter, and the fine material settling out when the lake is ice-covered. So we're looking at a lake, typically, and one which is far enough north that it covers over with ice during the winter, and streams are washing material from the surrounding land into the place, and the coarser material settles out during the growing season, and leaving behind only the fine material, which can then settle out when the lake is ice-covered and there's no wind stirring up the water. Examples of clay silt layers, one most spectacular is the Green River shales of Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. Here we have several million pairs in these various locations, in a few places up to 20 million. The Green River shales cover over 10,000 square miles, so roughly on the order of 100 miles in each direction. The thickness varies, interestingly, with the frequency of the sunspot cycle, 11 years, and with the precession of the equinoxes, 23,000 years. Another such formation is the Hayman Formation in Texas, 15,000 sandstone shale pairs, large area, almost a mile thick. How does one get silt to settle quickly? Silt is that very fine stuff that makes water look muddy when it has gotten in there. And for that sort of thing to settle out, you need very still water for a significant period of time. If you go back and think about some of the numbers there, we're talking about trying to lay this down in a year in the flood geology scheme. So several million pairs in 365 days. Means that you've got about 1,000 per 100 days. You've got about 1 million per 100 days, or about 10,000 per day of these pairs. And dividing 10,000 into 24 hours, you're going to get things settling in just a few seconds, something which silt doesn't do. Carbonate reefs. A reef is a mound of limestone consisting of the skeletons of corals. Coral animals can only live below water in the top 100 feet of the sea, where they get enough sunlight to function. They are sea animals, so they only live below water. Corals have to process a great deal of seawater to get the calcium carbonate they need to make the reef. Calcium carbonate is, after all, a fairly rare salt in the sea. The fastest known growth rates for coral are 1/2 inch per year. Examples of carbonate reefs: the Inuwetok Atoll, where the early hydrogen bomb experiments were done in the South Pacific, is one. The Inuwetok Atoll is 4,600 feet thick. It took 100,000 years to form at the fastest known rates. And we have evidence of erosion and land plant pollen at some levels, suggesting that for some periods of time, at those levels, the land was above sea level and was growing plants on it, and was eroding all things that will interrupt the growth of coral and actually take away some coral at that particular time. So that would make it more than 100,000 years. We also find buried reefs in the geologic column as well, in Texas and Alberta, and the sketch to the right is a cross-section through the North Alberta Basin, and the little sort of pillar-looking objects seen at the near the extreme left, just to the right of the yellow, and then twice more to the right of that are examples of buried reefs. These are underlaid by thousands of feet of sediments, which in the Young Earth scheme were laid down in the flood. And the reefs are up to 1,000 feet thick and many miles long. And there is evidence that the reefs have grown in place. They're upright. They're shaped like reefs. They have material on the seaward side that suggests they had been eroded and material had slid down the front slope. So what do we see here? Well, and notice they're overlaid by a significant amount of sediment as well. It looks like something that the sediment underneath was laid there first, and then these coral reefs grew, and that took a long time. And then these coral reefs were buried by sediment, and that took a long time. It does not look like we're looking at a one-year phenomenon. Another phenomenon that points to an old universe, old Earth, is chemical separations. A number of geologic strata are nearly pure salt or nearly pure limestone or shale or sandstone. If the flood was characterized by huge tidal waves in order to form the layers, how do we get these nice separations rather than everything mixed up? If you looked at the kind of things you get when a tsunami passes through, you get stuff all mixed up. In an old Earth view, these represent long-term environments. For example, a tropical tidal flat with strong evaporation is the way you get your salt layering. A temperate lake or bay with sedimentation is how you get your shale or sandstone. An example of chemical separation? The Red Wall Limestone in the Grand Canyon. Here's a panoramic view of a part of the Grand Canyon, and you can see marked there in our picture the Red Wall Limestone. This limestone is 500 to 700 feet thick, nearly pure limestone with some iron materials having seeped down into it to produce the reddening. The Red Wall Limestone extends north-south 175 miles and east-west 275 miles. It contains an enormous number of marine fossils as opposed to the layers above it. Many of these fossils are delicate and unbroken, so apparently these fossils had turned to rock before 2,000 feet of the sediment that lies above it in various places was ever added. Again, not something that sounds like a short-term, one-year flood. Fossil footprints. We find fossil footprints here and there. The Young Earth interpretation, I'm thinking particularly of the Paluxy River footprints, claim that both human and dinosaur prints are in the same strata, so that both lived at the same time, so the evolutionists who put dinosaurs before humans are wrong. Well, there are some problems with that Young Earth interpretation. The Paluxy strata are underlaid by 8,500 feet of sediment. So on the Young Earth scheme, this sediment was laid down by the flood. We suppose that Noah and his family and the dinosaurs got out and ran around on the material during the middle of the flood. Though the Paluxy strata are at the surface at Paluxy, they are overlaid to the east and the south by a great deal of sediment. That suggests that we are talking about something that in the Younger scheme would have to have been in the middle of the flood, not at the end of the flood. And by the way, this is not very near Ararat. Thus, in the Younger view, these tracks were made during the flood. Recent evidence indicates that most of the claimed human tracks in the Paluxy sediments are part of sequences that are clearly dinosaur tracks further on. that a certain type of dinosaur has a shape of the bottom of its foot that is fairly close to that of a human footprint, except for some claws, and when this dinosaur walks in rather soft sediment, the claw marks can fill in, and it looks rather more human. Other human tracks found near Paluxy are clearly fraudulent. Somebody's actually carved them in the stone. And some are irregular erosion patterns. A few might be genuine. More work would be needed to establish this particular matter. We should point out that about 60% of the underlying strata is limestone, with fossils indicating that this material was rock before the other sediment was laid down. Wind-laid sediments. In many places, wind-laid sediments, desert dunes, are interspersed with large thicknesses of water-laid sediments above and below. Are we to assume that parts of the earth were bone dry during the one-year flood and that large dunes had time to form? Again, it looks like we are looking at a much longer history than that, in which this area was underwater at one time and later became desert. This better fits an old Earth. Other problems with the young Earth position. Other scientific problems. There are other scientific problems with the young Earth view of origins besides those related to flood geology. One of these would be changes from current rates, and another would be astronomical problems. Both of these are a class of problems rather than just a single problem. Current rates. To have a young Earth, one must assume that many things happened much more quickly in the past than they do today, that the speed of light moved much faster than it does today. That is at least a common suggestion for avoiding the problem of light travel time. I sketched that in our tract, Light Travel Time, on our IBRI website, and it comes up also in our discussion, The Cosmos and the Bible, another PowerPoint talk. Radioactive decay. Young Earth scheme assumes that the radioactive decay happened faster at some time in the past than it does today. Cooling of rock, something that is very basic as well. We have some feel for how rock naturally cools off, and this has to be assumed to be much, much faster in the past. Stop and think about each one of these. We're trying to figure out how to account for something that scientists suggest took millions or billions of years. We're trying to figure out how to explain it as happening in a few thousand years. So you're going from at least millions to thousands, and that's a factor of 1,000. So you have to speed up the speed of light by a factor of 1,000, radioactive decay by a factor of 1,000, cooling rock by a factor of 1,000, movement of continents by a factor of 1,000. We have evidence regarding movement of continents, and we'll say more about that. And the growth of corals, we have already spoken about briefly. And magnetic field reversals. There is good evidence in the geologic record for magnetic field reversals. One young Earth interpreter seeks to put all these magnetic field reversals in the one-year flood rather than having them spread out over geologic history as they appear to. Movement of continents. We can measure the current rate at which continents move, about 1 inch per year. We don't do this just by correlating the geologic strata in South America and Africa, though it can be done that way. You get 100 million years for when those two separated. We can actually, with satellites, detect the movement of the continents, and it's only order of 1 inch a year. I'm not talking exact figure, but different than 1 foot a year or a tenth of an inch a year. This is consistent with geologic dating for their separation and collision. It also fits the increasing depth of sediments as one moves away from the spreading centers. It also fits the pattern of magnetic reversals. The Bible tells us that we should accept a testimony on the basis of two or three witnesses. And some have said, we have no witnesses to what happened in prehistory. No, in fact, here we've got the movement of the continents. We've got the increasing depth of sediments. We've got the pattern of magnetic reversals. and we also have a radioactive decay, and they give consistent results for these things. So we've actually got something like 4 witnesses for this particular phenomenon. Astronomical phenomena. A young Earth is not the natural reading of light travel time, stellar life cycles as calculated and observed, planetary cratering, tidal slowdown. We will not look at those in some detail. They are looked at in other materials on our website or other papers by Perry G. Phillips, if you'll do a Google search on his name. The young Earth track record is not impressive. Dinosaur human tracks have been touted as a big evidence of young Earth, and yet when it became apparent that a number of these were dinosaur tracks that were mistaken as human tracks, a number of the young Earth people have backed off of those materials. Decaying magnetic field of the Earth, that was originally alleged to be a decay only, no sort of flipping back and forth, and there was no scientific model for how one would explain anything of this sort. Now we see good geologic evidence for a flipping magnetic field, so that another young Earth researcher has had to put all of that in the one-year flood. We see some information on how a oscillating magnetic field can work, because our Sun actually has an oscillating magnetic field that switches back and forth in 11 years. The Earth, with material that is much more able to hold a magnetic field, switches much more slowly than that, but we presume that the process has some resemblance to the one on the Sun. Changing speed of light. Barry Setterfield argues that the speed of light was virtually infinite at creation and has slowed down to its current speed now, and yet virtually all of that is done by extrapolation from an apparent change in the speed of light at present. If you actually look out into the universe, we have a number of places where you can indirectly measure the speed of light because it shows up in various equations. Now, we do not get any evidence of changing speed of light like that at all. Shrinking sun has also been alleged, and again has been shot down. There's articles on that in the Journal of the American Scientific Affiliation, Perspectives on Science and Christian Faith. Moon dust. It was thought by scientists that there would be a lot of dust on the moon, and they were concerned about our first lander sinking in it. The landers did not sink in it, and young Earth creationists picked this up to say, well, there has really been very little moon dust produced on the moon that shows the moon is young. Well, further geological studies on the moon, selenological studies, if you like, have shown that indeed there is a great deal of moon dust on the moon, but this moon dust is cemented together. The moon dust is in a vacuum, very good vacuum compared to anything we can make on Earth, and there's a flow of charged particles past the moon due to the solar wind, and these produce a type of cementing we call sintering, a type of welding even, you might call it, and this puts the moon dust particles back together and makes a fairly tough surface to walk on. The young Earth position also argued that there were no old meteor craters, and this showed that the Earth's geologic record was really rather short, rather than millions or billions of years old. Well, in fact, there are old meteor craters, and a number of them have been discovered in recent years. The two most notable ones for our residents in the United States on the East Coast, perhaps, would be the Chicxulub crater located in the Yucatan Peninsula, which is probably the crater of the strike that wiped out the dinosaurs. And the base of the Chesapeake Bay is also a meteor crater. How can you detect an ancient meteor crater when the surface has been reworked so that there's no visible form like that? It turns out that meteor craters, being the result of an object moving at up to 40 miles per second striking Earth, leave minerals behind that can only be formed at pressures far higher than even occur in the middle of the Earth. And we do find these kind of things in meteor craters. Actually, the young Earth position in some ways is similar to the argument for geocentrism. They have a similar structure. According to geocentrism, the Sun goes around the Earth instead of the Earth around the Sun. The emphasis of geocentrists is placed on the alleged meaning of various Bible passages. Sun, stand thou still, the sun rises and the sun sets, etc. Placed on the alleged meaning of various Bible passages, ruling out other views, such as the suggestion that this might be what things look like from the Earth, but not a statement of what they look like from out in space. Proponents of geocentrism refuse to let scientific data count in deciding what the Bible might mean. Well, those same two features, emphasis placed on the alleged meaning of various Bible passages, such as use of the term day, or the genealogies in Genesis 5 and 11, are emphasis placed on their alleged meaning to point to a young Earth as ruling out other views, and proponents of old Earth, of young Earth creationism, refuse to let scientific data count in deciding what the Bible might mean. We have a caution here that goes all the way back to Augustine in the early centuries A.D., but is worded very succinctly here by Thomas Aquinas in about 1200. Aquinas says, as Augustine teaches, there are two things to be observed in questions of this kind. First, that the truth of Scripture be inviolably maintained. Augustine, Aquinas, and myself are biblical inerrantists. Second, since divine Scripture may be explained in many ways, that no one cling to any particular exposition with such pertinacity that if what he supposed to be the teaching of Scripture should turn out to be plainly false, he would nevertheless presume to put it forward, lest thereby sacred Scripture should be exposed to the derision of unbelievers, and the way of salvation should be closed to them. We should be concerned that we not put any stumbling blocks in the way of people that the Lord would want to come to salvation, that we not be hindering the Lord's work. Yes, we should hold to what we understand to be the truth, but we ought to use some care in realizing that we're finite people. We may be mistaken. And so we should treat our own views in that way and hold to the inviolability, as he says, of Scripture, the inerrancy of Scripture, but not the inerrancy of our own interpretations. Well, that's the end of this talk, and I call upon you to think about what Paul has to say. Test all things, hold fast to that which is good. May the Lord help each one of us to do that in dealing with our understanding of Scripture and our relating of Scripture to science of today.